All right, welcome back to the deep dive. Today we're diving into a case, a Supreme Court case that really gets at the heart of how labor law and technological change sort of, you know, bump up against each other.
Yep.
And this is NLRB v. International Longshoremen's Association.
A classic.
A classic from way back in 1985.
Yep.
And so, you know, at the core of this, I think, is a pretty classic struggle, which is, you know, unions trying to protect their jobs when, well, frankly, when innovation comes in and sort of like fundamentally shifts how work gets done.
Absolutely. And it's a great case study, I think, on, you know, how the law tries to catch up with, you know, progress.
Mm-hmm.
We'll see.
Yeah.
We'll see how they do. And I think this case is perfect for that. You know, we're looking at containerization.
Right.
The explosion of containerization in the shipping industry. And how that totally challenged the traditional work of longshoremen. And really the crux of the case is, you know, was the union's response, the rules on containers, was that a legitimate way to try to safeguard their jobs, or was that an illegal overreach into the work of others under the, you know, National Labor Relations Act?
Right. And so that's what we're going to try to unpack today. You know, for you law students out there, this is important stuff. I mean, I'm sure you guys are, you know, swimming through the very often very murky waters of labor law.
Oh, yeah.
And, you know, I think this decision helps clarify some important legal principles that continue to be relevant today as we see, you know, honestly, automation impacting so many different industries.
Absolutely. And it just keeps going. More automation, more questions.
It's not stopping. Right. So I guess let's just start at, you know, ground zero here, which is containerization. So what was so game changing about this? How did it impact the longshoremen's, you know, traditional work?
So, I mean, just picture the docks. You know, before containerization, you've got longshoremen, you know, it's backbreaking work. They're handling all this cargo, you know, every piece individually. It's crates, it's sacks, it's barrels, you name it. It's all over the place. Very labor intensive. Then containerization comes along. It's like, bam, total game changer. You've got these huge standardized containers that can be moved on and off ships way faster with these big cranes.
Yeah.
Super efficient. The problem is, it really reduces the need for all those longshoremen who used to do that manual work.
Yeah.
So yeah, job security concerns, major concerns within the union.
Huge.
Yeah.
So, I mean, understandably, the ILA, they're facing this, you know, massive disruption to their members' livelihoods. And so they come up with these rules on containers. So let's break that down a little bit. What were these rules and what were they trying to do?
Well, at the core of these rules, basically they said any cargo going into or out of a container within 50 miles of a port, that's ILA territory. That's got to be handled by ILA members.
Yep.
Now, here's where it gets a little bit, you know, tricky.
Yeah.
They applied this rule even if the work had moved away from the traditional waterfront.
Okay.
So let's say you have goods being consolidated, you know, deconsolidated at an off-pier warehouse.
Right.
Still within that 50-mile zone. Or truckers. Truckers handling those containers mid-route, loading, unloading, the ILA is saying, hey, that's our work.
That's our work, yeah. So essentially they're trying to like follow the work inland, even if that means claiming work that might have traditionally been done by, I don't know, truckers or warehouse employees who aren't even part of their union.
That's right.
I mean, that's going to ruffle some feathers, right? I mean, it's bound to create conflict. And that's where the National Labor Relations Board steps in.
They come to play.
Right. And they didn't totally throw out the rules, but they had some issues with how the rules were being applied in certain situations.
Exactly. So the NLRB, they were okay with the idea that the rules, generally speaking, could be seen as like a form of work preservation, you know, protecting the work that had historically been done directly by longshoremen at the docks.
Mm-hmm.
But they had a problem with how they were being applied in two specific scenarios.
Hmm.
One was with these short-stopping truckers.
Okay.
So these are like independent truckers. They pick up a sealed container. You know, they might do some loading or unloading themselves as part of the delivery route.
Yeah.
And the second group was these traditional warehousers.
Okay.
So companies that historically handled goods that weren't containerized, but now they're dealing with containers too.
Right.
And the NLAB said, look, in these situations, the ILA is engaging in what we call secondary activity.
Oh, okay.
So think of it like this. Their main beef, their primary dispute is with shipping companies.
Right.
But by trying to control the work of these other folks, these neutral third parties, these truckers and warehousers, They're indirectly putting pressure on those companies to stop doing business with the shipping companies unless the ILA's demands are met.
Right.
So it's like, you know, you're trying to hit them through somebody else, and the NLRB said, that's not cool.
Gotcha. So they saw it as like ILA is reaching beyond their traditional scope of work and trying to like exert control over these other businesses that aren't even their direct employers.
Exactly.
Okay, so that really sets the stage then for this big legal challenge that ends up going all the way to the Supreme Court.
Big time.
So let's lay out like the key legal questions that the court had to wrestle with here.
So it all boils down to whether these rules on containers violated two super important sections of the National Labor Relations Act.
Okay.
First one, Section 8B4B. That one prohibits secondary boycotts. We just talked about that. That's, you know, trying to force a neutral employer to stop doing business with another employer who you have a labor dispute with.
Right.
And then the second one is Section 8, and this one bans what are called hot cargo agreements. And these are basically agreements where an employer says, okay, I won't handle, you sell, transport, or deal with the products of another employer because of, you know, a labor dispute.
Yeah.
So the court had to figure out if these rules were really just a way for the ILA to hold on to work they'd always done, even if technology changed how and where it was being done, or were they using these rules to muscle in on new work that wasn't really theirs and put the squeeze on these other businesses?
Right. I mean, it's a tricky question. It's like, are they just trying to protect what's theirs, or are they trying to, you know, grab something new?
Exactly.
And just to, you know, add another wrinkle here, this case didn't just magically appear before the Supreme Court in 1985. Like,
yep.
There was already a bit of a legal history, right?
Oh, yeah. It had been around the block a couple of times.
Yeah. Can you just give us a quick rundown of, you know, how this thing made its way up to the highest court?
Sure. So first, the NLRB, they ruled against the ILA. They said, look, these rules, they're mostly unlawful.
Okay.
The ILA was like, no way, we're appealing this thing.
Yeah.
So it goes up to the Supreme Court in 1980. And this is what we call ILA. So in this first round, the Supreme Court basically punts it back to the NLRB. They're like,
yeah,
you need to take another look at this. And you really need to focus on whether the work the ILA is claiming is truly work that longshoremen have traditionally done.
Right.
So the NLRB goes back, does their homework, and comes up with a revised decision.
Mm.
But guess what? They still find parts of the rules to be unlawful.
Okay.
So round two, it goes back up to the Supreme Court in 1985, which is the case we're talking about now.
Okay.
So yeah, the justices were already kind of familiar with the whole drama.
They'd seen it before. Okay, so the Supreme Court had kind of already signaled to the NLRB, like, hey, you need to rethink your approach here.
Right.
So now let's dig into the 1985 decision. Justice Brennan wrote the majority opinion. What was his, like, core argument? Like, what was the principle that really guided his thinking?
So Brennan's majority opinion really zeroes in on this idea called the work preservation doctrine. And what the court is saying is the real question isn't just where the work is happening physically. Like, is it on the pier or is it inland? You know.
Right.
But rather, are these rules truly about protecting work that's always been done by longshoremen?
Gotcha.
And the court recognized that, you know, containerization, all this fancy new technology, mm-hmm. might have shifted some of those tasks related to loading and unloading ships, might have moved them to different locations.
Right.
But that doesn't necessarily mean it's not still fundamentally longshoremen's work.
Yeah. And so I guess that leads to the next big question, which is, okay, so how did the majority decide whether the rules were actually about protecting that traditional work or if they were, you know, like we were saying, trying to grab new work? Did they have some sort of like test or analytical framework that they used?
They did. They had a two-part test.
Oh.
So first, they looked at the main goal, the primary intent of the union. Mm-hmm. Was the ILA really just trying to protect the work that had always been done by their members? Or were they trying to, you know, pull a fast one and put the screws to these other employers like the truckers and warehousers?
Right.
So that was the first question. And then second, they looked at employer control.
Okay.
So did the shipping companies, who are the direct employers of the longshoremen, did they actually have the power to assign that work that was in dispute?
Okay.
Because if they didn't, then it might look like the union was trying to go after someone other than their primary employer.
Right, which is a problem.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, you know, I think one of the really critical parts of this decision was the fact that the majority really disagreed with how the NLRB had handled this. You know, they had decided to partially invalidate the rules. Mm-hmm. Like, some parts are okay, some parts aren't, but the Supreme Court was like, nope.
Nope.
Not how it works.
Not how it works.
So what was the basis for for that rejection? Like, why did they say you can't just like pick and choose which parts of the rules are okay?
So this is a really important point. They basically said, look, just because the rules might have some impact on businesses that aren't directly involved in the dispute, what they call extra unit effects, you know, like those truckers and warehousers.
Right.
That's not enough by itself to say the whole agreement is illegal.
Okay.
And there's this great quote from Justice Brennan. He says, extra unit effects alone provide an insufficient basis for concluding the agreement has an unlawful secondary objective.
Okay.
So they're saying even if truckers and warehousers are affected, that doesn't mean the rules are automatically bad if the ILA's main goal was this lawful work preservation thing.
Gotcha. So it's like, even if there's some collateral damage, as long as like your main objective is legitimate, you're probably in the clear.
Exactly. It's like, you know, you build a fence on your property line.
Right.
It might block your neighbor's view a little bit. But if your main goal is to defend your property, hey, that's fine.
Yeah. Okay.
The court was making a similar point here.
That's a really helpful analogy. Yeah. Okay. So it's about the core purpose, not just the, you know, the ripple effects. But of course, Supreme Court decisions are rarely unanimous.
Of course not.
You know, you got the dissenters. And in this case, Justice Rehnquist, he was not on board.
A big dissent.
Yeah. He filed a dissenting opinion. So what was his main argument? Like, why did he think the majority got it wrong?
Well, Rehnquist really felt that those rules, especially when it came to those truckers and warehousers, were not about preserving traditional longshore work at all.
Okay.
He thought the ILA was trying to, as we said before, acquire work that had never really been done by their members.
Right.
He was very focused on the literal wording of the NLRA, particularly Section 8E, the one we talked about that says you can't have agreements where an employer agrees to stop doing business with other parties.
Right.
And he said, look, these rules are basically forcing the shipping companies to stop doing business with any truckers or warehousers who aren't using ILA labor for this container work within 50 miles of the port.
Okay.
That's a clear violation of the act.
So he's taking a much more like literal approach to the law, and he sees the rules as, you know, a way to strong arm these businesses and disrupt those relationships.
Absolutely.
Okay, so this case, clearly it had, you know, a big impact on how we interpret labor law, you know, even today. So what would you say is the most important takeaway from this decision? Like, why does it still matter all these years later?
I think the biggest takeaway is that it gave us a clearer framework for understanding when unions are, you know, legitimately trying to protect jobs in the face of technological change and when they're crossing the line into that illegal secondary activity we talked about.
Okay.
And the fact that the court really focused on the union's primary intent rather than just the effects of their actions, that became a key principle in analyzing these kinds of labor disputes going forward.
Yep.
So even if a union's efforts to protect their work end up affecting other employers, if your main goal is really to safeguard that work that they've always done for their direct employer,
right,
then those efforts are probably going to be okay under the NLRA.
So intent matters.
Intent matters.
Okay. And this isn't just like some dusty old legal precedent, right?
Wow.
I mean, this case, it feels really relevant today when we see all this automation and technological change happening in so many industries, not just shipping.
Absolutely. I mean, it's everywhere you look. This tension between labor rights and, you know, the relentless march of technology, it's a constant in our economy. And this Supreme Court decision, it's like a roadmap for understanding how unions can navigate this, you know, this ever-changing landscape.
Right.
And it shows how the law is trying to, you know, find that balance between promoting progress, but also making sure workers aren't getting left behind.
Right. So to sum it all up, in NLRB International Longshoremen's Association, the Supreme Court ultimately sides with the ILA. They uphold these rules on containers as a legitimate attempt to protect the work that longshoremen have traditionally done, even with all the changes brought about by containerization.
Right.
And the key to their decision was that focus on the union's primary intent.
Yeah.
It was about protecting their work, not about trying to, you know, mess with other employers like those truckers and warehousers.
Yeah, it's a great summary. And it really leaves us with, you know, this big question, especially for all those law students out there. You know, thinking about this ruling from, what, almost 40 years ago, how might unions in all these different industries today, how are they going to handle the challenges of automation, artificial intelligence, you know, all this stuff?
Right.
I mean, what are the limits of this precedent when you're dealing with completely new kinds of technological disruption?
Yeah.
What new legal questions are going to pop up as technology keeps, you know, reshaping what work even means? It's something to think about.
Yeah, it's a huge question. I mean, it's something that's not going away anytime soon.
Nope, not at all.
And we'll have to keep an eye on it.
Absolutely.
Well, I think that's about all the time we have for today.
Great discussion.
Yeah, it was really interesting to dig into this case. You know, and as always, you know, we encourage you to keep exploring, keep researching, and keep learning.
Always.
And until next time, this has been The Deep
Thank you,
Dive.
God.